The city of New York has announced that they have reached a $6 million settlement with the family of Eric Garner. But the family of the victim of police violence says the settlement will not slow down their efforts for police reform. Garner's mother, wife, and kids have called on the U.S. Attorney General to bring federal charges against the police officers accused of choking Eric Garner to death a year ago this month. The incident was captured on a cell phone video by a person standing nearby. In the video, Garner says, "I can't breathe," 11 times before he finally collapses and dies. The only person who has faced any charges in the case is the bystander who filmed Garner's murder.
Tysha Allen is claiming in a federal lawsuit that NYPD officers assaulted and falsely arrested her after she filmed a video of Eric Garner. In the lesser-known video, Garner lays incapacitated on the sidewalk while several police and emergency medical workers stand nearby. The more well-known video, which shows the police chokehold on Garner, was filmed by Ramsey Orta, who has been arrested multiple times and harassed by the police along with his family. Tysha Allen claims that months after Garner's death, police arrested her after calling her that B-word that filmed the Eric Garner video. Allen's lawsuit seeks more than $150,000 in damages for the 9-count complaint. The complaint against the department says that Allen was unlawfully imprisoned, unlawfully searched, and subjected to excessive force by the New York police.
Today, President Obama spoke at the NAACP National Convention in Philadelphia. Obama spoke to disparities within the criminal justice system, calling on lawmakers to reduce unduly harsh sentences. Here's Obama at the NAACP convention.
But today I want to focus on one aspect of American life that remains particularly skewed by race and by wealth, a source of inequity that has ripple effects on families and on communities and ultimately on our nation. And that is our criminal justice system, partly because the statistics cannot be ignored. We can't close our eyes anymore. If we're gonna deal with this problem and the inequities involved, then we also have to speak honestly. There are some folks who need to be in jail. But here's the thing. Over the last few decades, we've also locked up more and more nonviolent drug offenders than ever before for longer than ever before. And that is the real reason our prison population is so high. In far too many cases, the punishment simply does not fit the crime. If you're a low-level drug dealer or you violate your parole, you owe some debt to society. But you don't owe 20 years. You don't owe a life sentence.
The U.S. Oversight and Government Reform Committee began 2 days of hearings on criminal justice and sentencing reform today. Day one featured testimony from members of the Senate and the House, along with the governors of Alabama and Delaware. One of those who testified today was Representative Bobby Scott, Democrat of Virginia. He spoke to the committee about the work of Congress's bipartisan task force on overcriminalization.
Unfortunately, Mr. Chairman, rather than this rational, thoughtful approach, too many politicians across the country have chosen to play politics with crime policy by enacting so-called tough-on-crime slogans like three strikes and you're out, or rhymes like you do the adult crime, you do the adult time. As appealing as these policies may sound, their impact has overloaded our prison to the numbers that have already been given, and also to the point where some recent studies have concluded that our over-incarceration is actually counterproductive, destroying so many families, wasting so much money, having so many people with felony records, meaning that it generates more crime than it stops. We know that we have a problem. And so faced with overcrowding prisons, no reduction in recidivism and wasted money, Chairman Sensenbrenner and I were chosen unanimously by our colleagues in the House Judiciary Committee to lead the Overcriminalization Task Force to actually do something about it. The task force undertook a comprehensive review of federal legislation, charging, sentencing, and reentry policies. It applied the work of the states, which have implemented bipartisan evidence-based reforms that have reduced overcrowding and taxpayer spending while preserving, even increasing, public safety. Over the course of a year and a half and 10 hearings, the task force heard from key stakeholders, including the Department of Justice, the Federal Public Defenders, the Judicial Conference, and the Sentencing Commission, as well as academics and expert organizations from the Heritage Foundation to the ACLU. As a task force consensus work product, we introduced the bipartisan Safe Justice Act, which improves safety and saves money by applying state-tested, evidence-based approaches to diversion, sentencing, recidivism reduction, rehabilitation programs, reentry, and supervision. During the inception and duration of the task force, my colleague, Mr. Sensenbrenner, and I were not interested in playing politics with crime policy. We did not conduct polls to measure the popularity of slogans and sound bites that the bill could generate. To the contrary, we focused our work on examining evidence-based approaches that increase safety, accountability, fairness, and efficacy, including one successfully implemented on the state level. Now, 32 states have already reduced both their crime rate and imprisonment rate over the past 5 years, including Texas, Wisconsin, Rhode Island, Georgia, South Carolina, New York, resulting in a cumulative cost savings exceeding $4 billion. They have reinvested in prison alternatives, better at breaking the cycle of recidivism. And today, research-based, state-tested, and community-based approaches enjoy support from Democratic and Republican governors. Many have branded their approach as, quote, right on crime.
That was Representative Bobby Scott speaking before the House Committee on Oversight and Government Reform. The committee continues its look at the criminal justice system on Wednesday, when it will hear from advocates for reform from both ends of the political spectrum.
Since the 9 dead fin whales were discovered in Alaska in June, 5 more whales have been found dead for about the same amount of time. Of the 5, 4 are humpbacks and 1 is a fin whale. Kate Wynn, a marine mammal specialist for the Alaska Sea Grant Marine Advisory Program, says that both species of whales eat similar foods and feed on similar patterns. Wynn thinks the whales may have consumed something toxic around the week of May 20th, resulting in their deaths. Tests have been carried out to determine the cause of death, but so far, no smoking gun has been found. Tests on tissue from one of the whales has proven negative for the biotoxin domoic acid, and results from 2 other tests for paralytic shellfish poisoning, or PSP, and for radioactive cesium-137 are still pending.
While California and much of the U.S. West suffer an unprecedented drought, the Midwest is again being hit by severe thunderstorms and large-scale flooding. At least one tornado touched down late Monday in Hutchinson, Kansas, while baseball-sized hail was reported near Chicago, and heavy rain triggered flash floods in Kentucky. A derecho swept across several states, according to the Weather Channel. The storms were moved towards the southeast on Tuesday, with an area from the Ohio Valley, Kentucky, and Tennessee down to northern Alabama most at risk, according to the National Weather Service. Up to 67 million people were at risk from high winds, with a flash flooding a growing concern, especially in Kentucky, which was already hit by devastating flooding on Monday.
The U.S. Army is considering the use of hollow-point bullets to replace the full metal jacket or ball ammunition currently in use. The difference is that the hollow-point bullets expand on impact and do far greater tissue damage. The rationale for full metal jacket is that the bullet retains its shape and tends to make a tunnel-shaped hole, and that's all you need to do to stop an enemy soldier. The Army is calling it special-purpose ammunition. This would be a departure from a battlefield practices that have taken place over a century. The 1899 Hague Convention outlaws any kind of expanding bullet in the battlefield. All NATO members except the U.S. adhere to the rule. The Army's argument is that since modern warfare often takes place in urban environments, hollow-point bullets would do a better job of killing, while keeping collateral damage to a minimum.
$100 billion. That's what Iran is looking to get back in frozen assets if it agrees to a proposal written Tuesday by the International Atomic Energy Agency. In order for the deal to go through, Iran has to agree to let the agency inspect all of its nuclear sites. It would also give Iran the opportunity to reopen banks in European Union countries. This deal could mark the end of a decade-long dispute over that country's nuclear program. If negotiations fail, sanctions on Iran could be reimposed.
And now, the latest news and developments from the occupied territories in Palestine from the International Middle East Media Center in Bethlehem.
Today, a service of the International Middle East Media Center at www.imemc.org. Israeli soldiers opened fire early on Monday morning on a number of Palestinian farmers working in their lands east of Khan Yunis in the southern part of the Gaza Strip. The army also fired at nearby homes, while military bulldozers blazed sand barriers. According to Palestinian media sources, soldiers stationed on military towers across the border fence east of Khan Yunis fired several rounds of live ammunition at the Palestinian farmers, forcing them to leave their lands. The soldiers also targeted a few nearby homes and property, causing damage but no injuries. In addition, Israeli military bulldozers placed sand barriers near the border fence east of Khan Yunis, while several armored vehicles were deployed across the border fence. In Hebron City, soldiers invaded several homes and violently searched them before kidnapping three Palestinians. The army also invaded Idna town west of the city and kidnapped one Palestinian after breaking into his home and violently searching it, causing property damage. In addition, several military vehicles invaded Dura town south of Hebron before the soldiers searched homes and kidnapped one Palestinian. The army also invaded Shuch town northwest of Hebron, searching a number of homes and kidnapping a Palestinian as well. In other news, the Palestinian Political Prisoner Society, PPS, has reported Monday that Administrative Detainee Uday Stati, 24, is ongoing with his strike for the 26th consecutive day and is facing constant violations and pressures by the prison authorities in attempt to force him to quit his strike. Stati was taken prisoner on November 16, 2014 and remained under administrative detention without trial. He is currently in a small cell that doesn't even have a toilet and lacks basic components of human use. And that's all for today from the IMEMC News. For more news and updates, please visit our website at www.imemc.org. Today's report has been brought to you by George Shmawi and me, Ghassan Bannoura.
You are listening to the KBOO Evening News. This is a volunteer-produced newscast, and we encourage your participation. Call us with your breaking news stories at 503-231-8032. Our production team for tonight's newscast is Doug McVeigh, Jim Thompson, Cliff Verla, and Shade Samuelson. Our engineer is Sequoia Wright, and the KBOO Evening News and Public Affairs Director is Jenka Soderberg. A podcast of local stories from this newscast is available on our website at kboo.fm/evening news, or look for us on Twitter at KBOO News. You are listening to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath, 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River, 91.9 FM. I'm Nicole Weinstock.
And I'm Jared Dantzler. Coming up tomorrow morning on KBOO. At 7, it's Democracy Now! With Amy Goodman and Juan Gonzalez. At 8, Doug McVeigh hosts Wednesday Talk Radio. He discusses prisons, community corrections, and rehabilitation, and reintegration of formerly incarcerated people with Jason Ziedenberg of the Justice Policy Institute. At 9 on Political Perspectives, host Jennifer Kemp interviews Joel Westheimer about his book, What Kind of Citizen? Educating Our Children for the Common Good. At 10, it's Air Cascadia, headlines, interviews, and commentary with Chris Andre. And at 10:15, hear Flashpoints, investigative news radio with Dennis Bernstein. And at 11, Chris Siegel and Rachel Bennett host the KBOO Food Show. Thanks, KBOO members, for your generous support and for support of this community radio station. Not a current member? You can become one today by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Good night, Nicole.
Good night, Jared.
Attention, KBOO members. You are invited to give your feedback on KBOO's draft mission and vision statements. Based on member feedback from the recent survey and member retreat, KABU board and staff members created draft mission and vision statements. Now we want to know what you think. This is your chance to help define KABU's guiding principles and priorities. Visit KABU.fm to review the draft mission and vision statements and submit your comments. Paper copies of the draft statements are also available at the station. Comments are due July 17th. If you have questions, please contact Monica Beamer at monica@kabu.org. Thank you for contributing to the development of KABU's mission and vision statements and for your support of community radio.
Tune into KABU every weekday at 7 p.m. for Hard Knock Radio, news and views from a hip-hop perspective with Davey D. Hard Knock Radio features in-depth interviews and profiles with community leaders, activists, hip-hop artists, and musicians, giving voice to community concerns and offering a unique forum to explore issues relevant to hip-hop community. That's every weekday at 7 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Attention, KABU members. You are invited to give your feedback on KABU's draft mission and vision statements. Based on member feedback from the recent survey and member retreat, KABU board and staff members created draft mission and vision statements. Now we want to know what you think. This is your chance.